Night gathers, and now our podcast begins. It shall not end until we're done talking. We are
the princes that were promised.
And hello, welcome to the princes that were promised. It's Sean and it's John, and we are wrapping up Ned Stark. I had a lot of fun talking about Ned Stark. I know Ned Stark's one of your favorite characters.
Number two.
John, obviously, John Stone's number one. I think everybody gets that idea.
Yeah. Just to get all my minisodes, it's all about Sean. Right, although right. I try not to. I always try to come up with ideas of like...
It always comes back to him.
And then I'm like, that's an awesome theory. I gotta talk about that now.
But you can always relate it to John.
My most knowledge is about John, so it's a lot easier for me to talk about theories about John.
Passionate about the character John.
Yeah.
Believe me, I've known you for years, and you are... You have like Luke Skywalker guys, and you have Han Solo guys. You're a Luke Skywalker guy.
Oh, yeah, without doubt.
And I consider myself a Luke Skywalker guy, too, but I like to think
I might even go as far as saying Han Solo's a disposable character, right? compared to Luke Skywalker. And some people are like, wait, you crazy?
You think of Han Solo the way that Harrison Ford thinks of Han
Solo. Right, yes. And I should get credit for that.
Right.
Because that's exactly how he thinks of Han. He should have been the martyr. That Obi-Wan was in episode 4, he should have been the martyr in episode 6.
Well, I think he wanted to die in episode 5, right?
Yeah.
He didn't want to do episode 6.
Yeah.
He's like, listen, I'm getting all these offers like that. Do you really need me? Like,
I'm all about the character whose mob, that he has no idea about his
the
mob.
The myth.
We're
going to talk about this, I guess, next week when we start. We're going to start talking about Daenerys Targaryen. But the term is called Mary Sue. And I don't know what the male equivalent is, but it's average young person, nothing special, but you find out that they are special and there's a mystery to them and they have these powers and they have this fate and destiny. And I don't like when I see it in movies these days because it's a trope that's overused. It works for Rey in The Force Awakens just because that's Star Wars. And it works for Luke because he's kind of like the originator of this, this kind of thing. But that's the thing, like... Luke isn't a normal guy, and it turns out that he becomes the most important person in the galaxy. And Jon Snow, it looks like that's going to be the same kind of thing. He's the most important guy in the realm. So every theory, it all goes back...
You can give me a theory that could be so far away from Jon, I'm sure I could probably pin it.
You bring it back
Jon
to him.
Snow somehow. Somehow it can relate to Jon.
Right. And that's not you just because Jon's your favorite character. That's the series, because Jon is... John, Daenerys, Tyrion. John is, the focal point of the series. So going back to Ned, knowing that information, but knowing that John is an important child and everything that we talked about in the last few weeks, how hard it was for him to keep this promise and how hard it was to live with himself.
Obviously, he's going to make the promise to his sister. I mean, I think a guy like Ned will definitely keep... But it's just the magnitude of the thing, the responsibility. I mean, we've talked about it in the weeks of covering Ned. Like, he loves taking it. He hates it, but he loves it. He loves the responsibility. Like, he just goes out and, like, to take this baby on with all the...
Everything that comes with it. Everything that will affect him and his new marriage.
All the drama that just comes with it. Yeah, exactly. All the drama that comes with it.
And it's not like he's a proven lord yet. He's a proven battle commander, and he really helped Robert win this war. If not for Ned Stark, Robert doesn't win this war. Mm-hmm. I think we can both agree with that.
Robert might not have gone out of the Battle of the Bells if it wasn't for Ned Stark.
No, definitely not. From
the south. The war might have been over right there and then. Rhaegar would have lived. And it would be completely... It's like all these things you look back on, like, well, what if?
I want to play a little what if. What if Ned doesn't get to... where's the Battle of the Bells?
This all goes back to all, like, the timeline issues. There probably is no really reason, realistically, get to these places if it wasn't for these plot holes, not, I want to say plot holes, but jumps in the timeline that a lot of people love to question later on.
Yeah.
But it's like, the same thing happened earlier in the series, that where a character is somehow in the southeast, he goes up to the north, back to the south, all within like 2 weeks, it seems.
Yeah.
We don't question that. But we'll question other things that shouldn't take so,
We don't question it because it's... We want to believe that it can be explained.
Right.
So we trust that it can be explained. And some people, they can try and put together the timeline and try and figure out how Ned moved around, how Littlefinger moves around, how Varys moves around.
It's just George needing those characters mm-hmm. to be at that place at that time for the story to work.
Okay.
Even when he gets to Lyanna, just coincidence, it's right before she dies. Like she could have died like 5 hours earlier.
Right.
A day earlier. But he's there just in time.
45 minutes earlier.
Right, exactly.
He pulls up and off the day and is like, oh, bro.
She's dead.
You're a little late. Let's do this.
He's just there just in the nick of time to get this vital information. No one questions that, though. Because we accept that. There's certain things that we seem to accept. There's certain things that we have to, like, there's no way you can get from Dorne to Starfall and Storm's End in 2 weeks.
You're right. That's basic. That would be like basic plot holes. How the hell does Ned get there just before she dies? You can suspend your disbelief because it's a fantasy story, but then you have these guys come up with all these reasons. It's like,
because, you know, there's no way he gets there in time, and, you know, but there is way. It's already been telling. He's just, it's all these little, like, could it be.
You're talking about like a plot device? Like how, like.
Yeah. Like, okay. It's like, well, they just hit these points where, like, case in point, that Lyanna, she's just there.
Right. I mean, it's.
It's Ned going into the Iron Throne, and Jaime's sitting on the throne. What if Jaime was.
He decided to get up, had to use the bathroom.
Yeah, right. I'm here.
Oh, Jaime, I didn't see you there. Why is the king dead?
Tywin coming in, winning the Blackwater. Just at that time, he's there. At that perfect moment, he's there.
Well, at least
he comes a half hour later, he might be too late.
At least with that's explained to us. And we know how that happens. And we know a few hours off, he wouldn't have made. Stannis would have been sitting on the Iron Throne, possibly,
right.
or been inside the city, and it would have been a whole different ballgame.
Right,
just a few hours later. But it's explained to us. With Ned and Robert's Rebellion, we don't get a first-hand account of that.
He's just all
stories.
Over the place.
But these stories have, especially since post-Game of Thrones with Ned's death, Robert's death, these stories have taken on almost a mythical level within the story. Like a story within a story. We're getting kind of meta now, but if you think about, I kind of knew my grandfather. One grandfather was dead before I was born. The other grandfather, I kind of remember up to age 8. He didn't tell me stories, but my father told me stories about my grandfather being at war. And some of the stories, when I'm little, I'm like, that's an awesome story. My grandfather's so awesome. But then as I get older, I'm like, I don't know. That doesn't, I don't think my father's lying to me. But every time a story's told, the story gets bigger and bigger. Some TV show years ago where the George Carlin, do you remember the George Carlin show? I think it was on Fox. Years ago.
Yeah.
We were in high school. George Carlin is driving home from somewhere and he sees lights in the sky. And he tells the story. Every time he tells the story gets bigger and bigger until, like, it's an alien spaceship that comes out and the aliens come out. And he's like, aliens came out. It gets ridiculous. But that's what happens every time a story is told, especially if it's a good story.
I got a funny story. He's actually my district manager now.
Mm-hmm.
But he was my store manager at the time and his son was playing, like, high school football. Got bigger. Every time he told the story, it just got bigger. The catch he made was more impossible. For, like, the quarterback didn't know how to throw the ball.
Right.
But, you know, at first he told the story, you know, he made a nice catch. Then all of a sudden, you know, it turned into he made, like, you know, a one-handed grab on
David Tyree.
Right.
Yeah.
Then it came into, like, he was triple covered,
falling
down, one-handed, catch saved the season. If it wasn't for this catch, the whole entire season would have been lost.
The high school football coach would have been fired, lost his home.
Yeah.
Kids would have been orphans.
Get the bulldozers in.
The Russians would have taken over Long Island.
This catch was the turning point for the season.
Saved the universe. And I'm sure it was a great catch. You hear the guy tell the story, and you know there's no way that this catch is that great. It's not possible for any catch to be there. I mean, what's the greatest catch? David Tyree's the greatest catch I can ever think of. I don't even remember it. You know what I mean? Like, it's just shit moves on. But you tell a story, you want to embellish a little bit. You want to add more details. You get better at telling the story.
Right.
You know, and that's just a natural human thing.
So what you're saying going back to Ned is some of these stories seemingly to be a little, not far-fetched, but they're pumped up.
There's
more air blown into the balloon than there are.
Exactly.
Kind of like...
Is it Ned telling anybody what happened at the Tower of Joy?
Not
it's just
really.
Ned remembering.
Yeah.
No other... I mean,
Ned just
Game of Thrones
it wasn't
different.
For Callan Reed. Everyone kind of knows that, he beat Arthur Dayne.
That's the opposite then, right? Because we have Ned saying, if not for Callan Reed, and then we have all of us who's hearing Ned tell this story, we're filling in all these blanks because we're not getting them.
The air is being blown in a balloon that Ned Stark killed Arthur Dayne. He did, but he didn't.
Ned Stark and Helen Reed killed Arthur Dayne, not very chivalrously.
Right.
At least as far as Game of Thrones, it may be different when we find out the truth of the Tower of Joy in A Song of Ice and Fire.
I think that's got to be true, though. I always felt in the books, too, like, there's something went down in there that we don't know the full truth about.
First off, I want to touch on what we have from Ned's point of view. Ned doesn't share that with anybody. He just shares that with us, the reader, through his own inner monologue. Mm-hmm. It's pretty vague. It's not very vague, but it's pretty vague. Not vague enough where we can't put the pieces together. Do you think that we are able to put these pieces together because of being familiar with George R. R. Martin's writing, getting through all five books, and then going back and doing a reread, knowing how he writes, being able to put the pieces together the more you read his writing? Is that how we're able to fill in the gaps with the Tower of Joy? And I'm talking before season 6 of Game of Thrones. Or is it the way it's just initially written? What is it about that passage? He dreamed an old dream. What is it about that passage that just sticks with you more so than any other passage in this entire series? What makes it work? What makes it so good for you? I'm just asking. Like,
it's,
is the mystery?
Some people think it's like so like hooky dialogue. I think it's great. They said it's mystery because it's like,
it's been criticized as being hokey. It's not hokey, but if it's a little bit larger than life, it's because it's Ned Stark talking with the greatest knight in the realm and the Lord Commander of the Kingsguard. Like, knights will talk in this way. That's especially these knights.
Right.
They talk chivalrously. If you read Duncan Egg, and I'm rereading it in the first Duncan Egg story, and he comes across some knights of the Kingsguard, and he says hello to them, and that's exactly how they talk. They're like, well met, Sir Dunk. That's how they talk like that. The verbiage that they use, I'm cool with that. People want to say it's hokey, that's fine, but that's the reason why. It's because it's three of the greatest knights in the realm and fucking Ned Stark. That's how they're going to communicate. It's not Robert talking with fucking...
Yeah, they're not going to be out there, oh, damn it, you knights, just give up the bloody whore. Yeah. You have Ned, who, on the surface, you think he's just asking these basic questions, but it almost, I think, Ned has kind of planned these questions.
You mentioned that in the past podcast,
He wants to find out how come you aren't there. He's actually being a detective right there. He's as a suspect. He's trying to gather information without knowing the information, not seeing it yet. How come you weren't with your prince? How come you weren't with your king? How come you're not with the Viserys?
It may have been the same podcast. We're in agreement that he knows Lyanna's in that tower.
Yes.
And we talked about this. We think he was tipped off by
I think, yeah. Chardin. I think he was tipped off that there was a child there. And he knows that these guys are honorable men. And these guys are out there and they're telling them, you know, we swore a vow. We hold our oath. We don't flee. Ned's got to be thinking, I'm asking these questions, how come they weren't with their king? Well, they're here, you know, fulfilling their vow. I know where the king's vow is. They're there to protect the king. That's the final one. That's the biggest one. How come you didn't go up for Viserys? There's no king's guard in Viserys.
Right.
And they're
just left that motherfucker to the wolves. Yeah. What's going on here?
Well, you know, Sir William, you know, Sir William and Darius fled the Dragonstone with your queen and Prince Viserys. You're like, well, Sir William's a good man and true, but not of the king's guard. The king's guard does not flee. I mean, at that point, Ned's got to be thinking.
So Ned may know Lyanna's...
Damn it, Ashar was right.
Ned may know Lyanna's in there. Ned may know that she has a baby with Rhaegar. But by asking those questions, he's figuring out that it's not a bastard. Because if it was a bastard child, even Lyanna being a noble woman, if it's outside of wedlock, it's a bastard.
Right.
It'll be a well...
And you would still think at least one bastard, of these kings would go off to their rightful king. Cause
right, because if that's a bastard, then Viserys is the king.
Right. So many you can't get that.
Right.
Oh my God.
I mean, that's basic Westerosi law. You can make a bastard can be legitimized and then...
Right, but only by a king. Rhaegar couldn't legitimize.
Aerys did not legitimize this child, so there must have been wedlock. And that's what Ned's figuring out by asking these questions. And he's not going to come out, he's not the kind of guy that's going to come out and directly say...
No, and it's not George's right to come out and also be like, does she have a kid up there, Arthur? Right.
Just be straight with me, stop fucking talking in riddles. There's a baby up there, it is a kid. Come on, man.
Is it a male? He says it's a male, like Ned turns back to Helmy. God damn it.
But that passage is...
It's so iconic. Well,
it's the crux of the whole series. And we've talked about that before. We talked about how everything relates back to Jon Snow, because that's the crux of the series, and that's who's in there.
Like somebody, why do you think Jon is so important? Because
here's why Jon Snow is important. Because basically all of Ned's motivations in A Game of Thrones are because of Jon. All of the motivations of all the other characters going forward in the series are because of Ned. And I'm not speaking directly. There's other motivations. There's other reasons for doing everything. But when you get down to the brass tacks, the conflict of this story, it's things that Ned sets in motion. And everything Ned sets in motion is because of the Tower of Joy, what that set in motion in him. We've talked about Robert and Ned's relationship and how it changed after Tywin presented Robert with the two dead Targaryen children.
That might prove to Ned what kind of man Robert could be.
It's also said that what brought them back together was mourning for Lyanna. Yeah. We could go into specifics, but I think that Ned having Jon, even if Robert went up to him and said, Ned, you know, you're right. I don't approve of Tywin killing those children, but I'm in a spot now. He's Tywin Lannister, and I need him to heal the realm. I need this marriage. I need to make it work, but I'll be extra vigilant, and I'm going to make sure I don't let him get too close. He could say all that, and he could apologize to Ned, and Ned could say, you know what, Robert, I'm glad. But it would never, even if he said that, it would never be the same, because Ned now has this child, and he knows Robert's rage towards Rhaegar. Right.
Kill every dragon spawn.
So if Robert knew that this baby was
a Targaryen,
yes,
he knew he would kill him.
Even if Robert apologized, got down on his hands and knees, and begged forgiveness from Ned for accepting what Tywin Lannister did, the relationship will never be the same. It's always going to be different.
We don't really know how in the book, but Lyanna said if Robert finds out, he'll kill him. You know he will.
Yeah. He may not think that he will, but it's possible. Definitely possible.
Right. He had. I mean, I think he had to, I would imagine.
Well, I would think that
a lot of people think Robert is best friends and that he would never harm Lyanna's child. I guess he would. And just the fact that it is Lyanna's child with Rhaegar would make him even hate him even more.
I think that's the crux, right? I think that's the question, because what's stronger for Robert then? Is Robert's anger and rage at Rhaegar Targaryen and all the Targaryens stronger than his friendship and loyalty to Eddard Stark, right? Because if he finds out that Jon is Rhaegar's son with Lyanna, but Ned says, they're both dead, I'm going to raise this child as my own, he's not going to be a threat to you, he has my blood, consider him not a Targaryen, consider him a Snow.
Just the way that he is, the way that Robert is with that, with all that.
Well, I think that's the question in Game of Thrones then, because I think that's what Ned is looking at with Robert. Not like he wants to come clean with Robert and tell him, but he's trying to see.
But it pays, when it does, it's
he's looking at how the years have changed this man. And
they haven't changed. And he realizes that when he meets him in Winterfell again, he still hates Rhaegar. He knows he still has to keep it a secret because he knows that there's no way he has changed.
Well, not that he even wants to be honest with it, but I think he looks at Robert. We know Ned fucking hates lying. He hates keeping
kills
this.
Him.
And I think it's too late at that point.
He tries to get Robert off that thinking of him hating Rhaegar.
Right.
It's over, my lord. You killed him, the Targaryens are done for. You know, he's like, not all of them. And Robert goes, you know, in my dreams, I kill him every night. Ned's got to be like,
dude, get over yourself. Like, seriously, 16 years ago.
Yeah. I was going to go in there and tell him about him. Not now.
Well, I'm sure he wants to, and I'm sure he wouldn't, even if he felt like it was old Robert. But I think that's why he's looking at Robert, and he's like, oh, there's the Robert I know. A few scenes where Robert is acting a certain way, and it's like, all right, that's the Robert I know. Ned felt better about things. But then he sees that rage and he's like, Jesus, like who is this guy? What has he become? He's not the man I know anymore half the time. He is half the time. He's surrounded by Lannisters. This is a secret I now have to take to my grave. Which I'm sure he was resigned to that fact anyway, but a part of him just needs to come clean with everything.
He also knows too, if Robert's gonna be influenced also by the Lannisters. I mean, if, yes, you know, like Robert, if he tells Robert, I'm sure Robert's going to say Cersei. That's like, or I'm telling the Lannisters, like, yeah, it's Jon. This all goes back to Jaime and Cersei having any inclination of who the child was or anything like that. Then it is possible. It's possible.
I don't think so. I think if they did, I think they would have made more of an effort to eliminate him.
Even if they just started thinking, well, that's Rhaegar's son. See how Cersei thinks. Mm-hmm. Well, that's Rhaegar's son. He's a threat to my sons.
Well, here's the thing.
That Luke Skywalker goes back to Luke Skywalker. It goes right back to episode 6 when, you know, I always go back to when Obi-Wan says, you know, the Emperor knew as I knew. If Anakin would have any offspring, they would be a threat to him. Mm-hmm. Same thing with Rhaegar Targaryen. That's where all this, you know, like, it involves a Luke Skywalker situation.
Right.
You know, because everyone knows if Rhaegar had a son, simply a legitimate son, they would be a threat to Robert. Not only because he's a Targaryen possible king, but Rhaegar was loved. Robert feels like still people call me usurper. Mm-hmm. Rhaegar's son comes around. There's a lot of people that would fight for him.
Absolutely. Especially the way the realm is, you know, in A Dance with Dragons, Feast for Crows. But if we go back to Feast for Crows, Cersei does have that plot to send one of the Kettlebacks up to the wall and kill Jon Snow when he gets there. I mean, the plan never comes to fruition because it's not a very well thought out plan. Nothing goes her way with that plan. But it's in her mind to do that, but it's presented more as Ned Stark's bastard up at the wall.
Yeah, it was more of, they thought that Jon would march south and be like the new King of the North.
He was Lord Commander of
the... But he would do something to get involved on the, for the Stark side. It wasn't to do with him
his heritage, right. His genealogy.
It was more of him possibly aiding Starks or Winterfell or something like that.
More just Cersei's in this mode of eliminating any enemy. And she's on a roll. And she's like, oh, Jon Snow is Lord Commander of the Night's Watch? Psh, we'll tie that into this stupid fucking plan also. Kill all my enemies. I want to take a break there and talk about Ned and Rhaegar and going into the Promise. We'll be right back. You are listening to The Princes That Were Promised. And we do not sow. We're back. The Princes That Were Promised. The Wardens of Long Island. It's not a lie if you believe it. If you tell, you tell a lie so many times, you start to believe it.
That is the great George Costanza.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you. Right. It's not a lie
if you believe it.
Textbook George Costanza.
Yeah, that has George Costanza written all over it. He lies. He lived by that saying.
He lies before he tells the truth. So, he's right. And Ned gives us an example of that because we've known for a while that Jon Snow is not his son. But you don't get that from any of the point of view chapters of Ned Stark in Game of Thrones. You don't get that Jon Snow's not his son. But there are moments that you can read into better with information you get later on in Song of Ice and Fire. And particularly, moments when he thinks of Rhaegar Targaryen. His friend Robert despises Rhaegar so much, even after he killed him, not just killed him, but ended the dynasty of his family. He was that angry. He's still angry at Rhaegar. We said before the break, we find out why, but if his friend Robert is that angry at Rhaegar, how come Ned isn't that angry at Rhaegar? Especially when Lyanna was his sister. Not even Robert's wife. Just a girl that he was infatuated with, but it's Ned's sister who we know he was close with, but it doesn't seem like Ned hates Rhaegar, or really thinks of him one way or another. Just for the sake of letting people know. Is it History of Westeros? Or
Radio
no?
Westeros. Radio this killed me. This killed me. Radio Westeros with Lady Gwen and Yoke Boy, who do fantastic on
they do a really good job.
They did their Ned Stark...
Around the same time we started doing ours.
We started ours like a week after. And I made a point not to listen to theirs because I did not want to get influenced.
This is true. Jon said this to me quite a few times. Not only that they were planning to do a Ned Stark series.
I just didn't want to get... I don't want to feel I'm ripping off them. Since we're doing a Ned 1, they're doing a Ned 1. I'm like, oh, listen to these guys. It's the same thing as Radio Company. They're just like... stealing their ideas.
Yeah.
So it was the other day I was on there. I said, let me click on it.
Right.
And within like the first 10 minutes, they bring this up. And I'm just like, by this very great passage I was going to use.
Right.
Because it's one of those things that the reason why I love using this, and when I caught it when I was doing my, little homework, it just struck me because a lot of the anti-RLJ, the pro- B.A.J., Brandon Sharkles, John, they take, any kind of paragraph, and they use sentences, and they try, brainstorm this into this huge conspiracy how it's not what it is. They never mention that this paragraph...
Oh, they never use this paragraph.
Oh, they never use this. Because if they use this, this is so connected to John and Lyanna that it would just kill them. They can't mention this. Preston Jacobs and... who is that guy? Always his last name is Anderson or something on YouTube. He's another one that really gets.
He's another BNA.
Yeah, and all these other people and.
Well, because you can make shit.
Nothing up. Personal, but just
somewhat because you can make shit up for anything. But that's the one passage that they'll supports.
They'll come out there and they'll say the broken promises that Ned had. Oh, what is that? Oh, that's because of Danny, and Danny's gonna get killed, and he broke his promise, and all this and that and that. This is all together. This next. Pretty much along that I'm going to go, the background is, it's all together in kind of like one paragraph. And they never mention it, because if they mention it, they know...
That doesn't support their stupid theory.
They know this is 100% full debunking the debunkers is right here in this.
Which we know John loves to do. And may I add, he's been planning to... Read this passage
for all the past five episodes. I've been waiting to get this in.
We're not saying we get the jump on... Radio Westeros. No, that's not what we're saying. We're just saying
it's just great minds think alike. Right. I just hate the facts, and then people are going to think, oh, he just got off of Radio Westeros.
Which is not true, because he's had this written down. We've been talking about this. We've been working on this Ned Stark series for a couple months now, and it's just Radio Westeros is awesome. Great minds think alike.
Right.
It's only one story. I mean, there's how many Song of Ice and Fire podcasts? So, that being said, Ned Stark and Rhaegar, take it away, John.
Then this how it all starts. In the scene in the time of the books and the show, that it's obviously not meant really in the show. This is a book where Ned meets up with one of Robert's bastard's moms, right?
Right.
Harry Barra, is that the name? Or is it... No, it's...
I thought it was...
Robert's bastard child, Barra, was Shittai. Shittai is the... It was the mom. Was...
Because Shittai is the brothel.
The brothel.
The girl that...
I'm getting all...
Basically, the young girl that he got pregnant was Shittai's brothel.
Mm-hmm.
And it's Barra is the... Hey, we got ourselves all spooked because of...
we all too pumped up.
Yeah.
Maybe Barra is the mom then. Because that's who Ned is talking to.
Yeah, I have a feeling Barra is the mom, and yeah, we don't have the name of the baby.
Right.
Because they did kind of adapt that in the second season where they were killing
That's right. Barra is the mom, because that's who Ned is talking to. Barra wants Robert to meet the child. And Ned says, I will tell him, child, and I promise you, Barra,
Barra, the youngest of Robert's known bastard children, born to King's Landing prostitute. Megan.
All right, so we
got... Barra's killed... Okay, by
and I'm just saying that right now, that anyway. Barra is the child. Kind of right the first time I should have gone with it. Barra is the child.
Beauty of editing. We're going to be right the first time.
And we'll repeat the line.
All right, yeah.
Eddard says, I will tell him, child, and I promise you, Barra should not go unwanting. The very next line says, after hearing that, Barra... She had smiled then, a smile so tremulous and sweet that it could cut the heart out of him.
Okay.
Now let's stop it right there before it goes on to the very next line. These past two sentences have Eddard saying, I promise.
Yes.
And then it has, after hearing that promise, she had smiled. A smile that was so tremulous and sweet that it cut the heart out of him. What's the connection right there?
Mm-hmm.
We have to reverse and go way back to when Ned thinks of Lyanna, when him and Robert are talking about the Crips. Ned remembered how she smiled then, how tightly her fingers had clutched his as she gave up her hold on life, as the rose petals were spilling from her palms then in black.
Right.
The promise that he's saying to the woman... What's the last time he made a promise? To his dying sister. And the same thing happened when he made that promise to his sister that he made to, what was the Megan?
Megan was the name of the whore, yeah.
They both smiled when he made that promise.
I don't know if he views Lyanna as innocent, but she can do no wrong in his eyes.
Right. He makes the promise. The smile comes. How she smiled then. It was like this. She was okay dying that because she was happy.
She could let go.
That she can let go, that the promise would be safe with Eddard.
She trusted Ned.
Right.
And she knew she could. She just needed him to promise, and she knew everything would be okay. She could let go.
It's the same smile.
Yeah.
I make a promise and a smile. Promise and a smile. And it's just like, oh my God.
Yeah.
This is where it just debunks RLD. The very next sentence, after the heart out of him, it says, riding through the rain night, Ned saw Jon Snow's face in front of him, so like a younger version of his own. So with all this, you're going from the promises connected to Lyanna, the smiles connected to Lyanna with this woman.
Right.
The next sentence, he thinks of Jon.
Right.
It's right there. It's right there.
Yeah.
And this, again, as I said before, they don't bring this up because it completely debunks RLD. If Lyanna had connection with Daenerys, why wasn't it? And that's when Ned thought of the Targaryen girl. Does it?
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, they can read any sentence and make up shit and connect it to something that's bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
But when you have, like, one of the only real hints at what's really going on behind the scenes, they can't connect it to their imaginary bullshit theory. If it was anything else, yeah, you can just make stuff up for it and figure out a way to connect it. But that you cannot. It's irrefutable.
Goes even further, a couple paragraphs later, it goes all full circle. From the promise to Lyanna to Jon, now it goes to Rhaegar. There was no answer Ned Stark can give to that but a frown. For the first time in years, he found himself remembering Rhaegar Targaryen. He wondered if Rhaegar had frequented brothels. Somehow he thought not. Now that line has been butchered alive by the debunkers that, oh, well, if he's High Ned's, you know, Rhaegar's son, how come it's the first time he's thinking about Rhaegar? Well, Rhaegar's mentioned in all his other previous chapters. But in this sense, he's connecting Robert and Rhaegar.
He's comparing Robert to Rhaegar. For the first time, you're getting an idea that maybe Rhaegar isn't as bad a guy as Robert makes him out to be.
Right. He's letting his guard down in his mind. He's thinking of Rhaegar for the first time in years as Jon Snow's father. Because all this time, as George Costanza would say, he's lived this lie. Right. It's not a lie if I believe it.
The natural flow of thought where he's... Right. He sees this thing that brings him back to
it's
the past.
It's human thought. And that's what George gets at. You're training yourself to do this, to believe in this, but that it's real.
He's training himself to believe that Jon Snow's his own son. Right. Right? But in that moment, he sees something that reminds him of that moment with Lyanna.
Right. Because that whole entire thing is all connected. Right. And it's just that smile. It's all full around connection. Going the from brothels to bastards.
Can't help it.
To smiles, to promises, to Lyanna, to Rhaegar, to Jon. George is running a human element. And I know someone who has been married twice, has 3 children.
Right.
Youngest child is with the second marriage, is the only one in the second marriage, and she has 2 other children, okay, with the first husband. The eldest child, if you were to see the husband, you would say that is not the father. She cheated on her husband with this guy.
Right.
And if you saw this guy and you saw the son, you'd be like, bingo.
Right, right.
But of course she doesn't say that.
No.
She can't. She's trained herself... to believe that this is my first husband's son. Thinks that his father is the first husband. Right. But she's trained herself. Just like Eddard, that human condition and train yourself to believe in this lie. Right. Believe it so much that you know it's real. And that's all it is. It's real. The human condition. Goes back into a circle. Brothels, whores, bastards. How can they frown on bastards so much? And, you know, promises and Lyanna and Jon... to Rhaegar.
So Ned doesn't have to... He lies to himself so much that's just the fact of his life, that Jon Snow is his bastard son, and he doesn't talk about it, and everyone else just accepts it, and he has just this one moment where his thoughts naturally flow to Rhaegar, and it's not even thinking that Rhaegar is the guy's father, but it's just the natural flow of his thoughts. Mm-hmm. And that's the promise that he made her. And we know that because of Game of Thrones.
Right. There's promises. What are the promises? Could be the broken promises, could be maybe denying John's birthright. Maybe he said to Lyanna, this is an assumption. We don't know this. Obviously, we don't know this. Maybe he said that, you know, I'll make sure that he has a claim, but he sent them to the wall. Maybe part of those promises are in dealing with not telling anyone the real truth. Because he can't really tell the real truth. He can't say, well, Rhaegar and Lyanna really loved each other. Because then it might be too, well, if they really loved each other, maybe they had a kid.
Right.
And then also you're bringing a kid home. So you can't even say that. He's got to keep that promise too. He's got to keep that a secret. Well, you know, my sister really loved Rhaegar. He just has to go up the flow with, how many hundreds of times do you think Rhaegar Targaryen raped her? You know, he has this to go, all he can say, it's over, my lord.
They're both dead.
Yeah.
That's an incredible amount of guilt, especially for who we know Ned to be. It's an incredible amount of guilt. Does he look at it as a dishonorable thing? I don't think so, because... of how much he values Lyanna and the lengths that he would go to protect her, which is what he's doing,
mm-hmm.
you know, by taking Jon as his own. All the ramifications of that. She's not just asking him, please protect him. That's not all she's asking him. It is, but it's not, because he can see what other problems that will cause. You know what I'm saying? He's just married Catelyn. Now he's going to bring home a bastard son. Yeah, that's okay. But for a guy like Ned, it's not. Mm-hmm. Okay.
He has Jon everywhere with him. It's not like... he's there in Winterfell, but he's like off.
Right, he's kept in the basement locked up.
Right, he's always there. It's like in Dance of Dragons when Bran sees that vision, Ned talking, I guess Bran with maybe with Benjen, was it, or someone, or whoever it was, at Winterfell, like, we'll raise them up like brothers. We'll
let them grow up to
be as brothers, and hopefully my
lady wife
will have in her heart to forgive me.
This got to be Ned with Jon, yeah.
Because it's Ned growing up as brothers. Rob, make sure Rob and Jon grow up as brothers.
Right.
And it's just that he can't even, like, turn Jon away at all. If he turns Jon away, he's, like, turning his...
sister.
I mean, let Jon go to, you know, the Glovers, or, you know, I'll have him be warded with the Manderleys.
Right.
That's still kind
of not an unheard of thing at all. A lot of times bastards are being warded somewhere else, and it's, you know,
like, get away from Winterfell. He can't do that. The only time he does that, and the old, you know, you can't, you know.
He's got to keep John safe.
Right.
Meanwhile, he has a wife that basically despises John, and he can't even defend John to his wife, though he should. Yeah, and I'm sure he snapped at her a few times. Like, he's my blonde, that's all you need to know.
I got
to
talk about this now, because you brought it up, and this is another big thing of the debunkers, is when, you know, when Catelyn tells the story of the only time that Eddard really got upset at her, when she's asking the questions, because of all the rumors that are going around about Ashara, and she asks him about Ashara, and Ned's response is, "Never ask me about John," he said, "cold as ice.
Yeah.
He's my blood. And that's all you need to know." So people dissect that. Well, he didn't ask about, she didn't ask about John. But it's so logical that it's so logical. He knew exactly the next question would have been. The next question out of her, if he didn't stop her right there, the next question would have been, is John Ashara's? He knows where she's going with that line of questioning.
And he understands it, but he's got to stop that shit.
Right. Right, so right even before I'm going to ask you about, I'm even going to ask that question about Ashara. Don't even go to John. Don't even think about asking about John. You're not getting an answer.
And now, my lady, I'll have you heard that name.
Yes, Ned's an honorable man. He's a just man. He's a good man. But he does have a sense of fear. And once he got that name, or where she got it from, they stopped.
Let me ask you something. Did you tell my wife about it?
But so many people ask that. Like, oh, he's got a guilty conscience about Ashara. It's not that. It's he knows. The first time I read that, I knew right away the next question would have been John.
It's not even interesting for Ashara to be John's. That's not interesting. The drama is in John being Lyanna and Rhaegar. That's right. It. There's nothing else interesting. There's no other father or mother of John that could be in any way remotely, literarily interesting.
And here's the thing that Preston brings up too at the end of his RLD is you'd still have an ice and fire with Rhaegar, Lyanna, and Dany, and you'd have an ice and fire with John, with Brandon and Ashara. How's House Dane fire? Because of the sun? Because
they're in the south?
Because of the... What are you saying? I don't...
No, you're wrong.
You're wrong. And it's just so funny. It's like these people still can't admit that they're wrong. That's what pisses me off. It's still like, oh, that's what the show's doing.
And the show's doing that because that's what the book will do.
Yeah.
They're not doing a different ending. George isn't making a different... It would kill the story if George did something different at this point. That promise that Ned makes to Lyanna, it really defines his character then in his adult years.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean,
we still he has that badge. He has that negative badge of honor. Well, I'll tell you what Jaime says. What about your husband? He fought the bastard also. You know, the great honorable Ned Stark, how honorable was he? He still brought a bastard home.
He was so honorable that it goes beyond that, where he's, because he loved his sister, he's willing to besmirch his honor for the rest of his life and lie to that child, to his wife, to his children, to the entire realm about who the child is just to protect him because his sister asked. What's more honorable then? Is it more honorable for yourself to have honor in the eyes of everyone? Like, oh, well, he doesn't have a bastard. He never cheated on his wife. And it's not like he gets any thanks for it.
It all goes back to what Maester Aemon said to Jon. And I love that line. What shall it happen when the day shall ever come when your lord father is forced to choose?
Between love and duty.
Between honor on the one hand.
All right.
And those he loved on the other. What would he do?
And John doesn't answer.
John is he's like, he would do whatever is right. No matter what. But it's where George is thinking about what he's going to be doing later on. It's kind of like the future with
Ned. I would think Maester Aemon doesn't know.
It's just in a way for the reader, to get in their minds. Well, you go back to, with Lyanna.
Yeah.
Well, he could have chose his honor. Been okay. Listen, I didn't follow this bad. This is Lyanna's.
This is a you problem. I don't see how I fit into it.
Yeah. But he takes the promise. I'll do it for you, Lyanna. I can't have any fun.
Saying yes is half, not even half of it. It's the repercussions of all of it.
And he doesn't have much time to think about it because his sister's dying and he's got to acknowledge this to his sister right now. Like, she's not like,
and of course,
get back to me in my decision. Of course, there are theories that Lyanna Stark didn't die and she's, you know, out there alive someplace. Right. Just like, as I said before, there's
north theories of the wall that
everyone has died and they're all coming back to life. There's going to be 10,000 characters at the end of the show because by the time everyone's gone, every theory is going to be right and everyone's going to come back to life somehow.
The show, the whole series is going to end where everybody's like, they just beat the others, and everybody's like, at the same time, they're like, I'm a Targaryen!
Everyone's a secret Targaryen.
Yeah. Of course Ned's going to say yes to that. Of course. Yeah. But it's the way he takes Jon as a bastard. He doesn't make up this elaborate story. If he has to...
Wyla is the closest thing.
Right, but that's because Robert asked him... Wyla was actually his wet nurse.
And that's a lot of people think, oh, well, look. Oh, here's another thing, too. Oh,
Jesus.
Here's another thing. No, they go with the wet nurse thing right. with Eric Dane... Or Eric Dane
yeah.
Said to, you know, to Arya, oh, you know, we were, you know, we're like Melt Bros because, you know, Wyla, my wet was, you know, your father's bastard son's mom. Well, right. Then it's like... Oh, well, what she's doing in... Oh, she's doing in Starfall. Okay. She was the wet nurse at the Tower of Joy. They needed... Right. They had a wet nurse there.
Yeah.
You know, Arthur Dayne, obviously Starfall had someone there.
Right.
And
right.
That's how they're Melt Brothers. Ned needed someone to feed the baby while they're trying to Starfall.
He can't feed the baby. Okay. So, like...
They needed someone.
Stupid, man. They're trying to make a mountain out of a molehill. Like, it's so obvious. It's not obvious. George hides it pretty well, but it's not. He's not hiding it that well. Where he's giving you a whole underneath the surface misdirection, you know, where you have to figure out that Jon is Rhaegar Lyanna's, and then he's not. You know what I'm saying? Like he's not. It's not that complicated. It's complicated, but it's not that complicated. The fact that Ned's able to live with this lie and believe this lie and tell everyone this lie without even telling the lie is what makes Ned the honorable guy. He does this thing for his sister that changes the rest of his life that he has to live with and rule with, and it does besmirch his honor, but he doesn't make up this story unless it's to protect Jon. Obviously a defining moment for the Ned Stark character, and just the way he's written, it's real interesting that we pick up on this guy who went through this experience watching his sister die and making this promise. And it is so well hidden that even with all these point of view chapters, we don't pick up on it unless we have an idea of what to look for.
Mm-hmm.
Even when Ned dies, that last point of view chapter we have of him, where he's in the dungeon, his thoughts go to Jon. He just have time with the boy and speak to him. And I think part of him realizes that he won't
right.
have time to speak to his boy. You brought this up one of the first times we started talking about Game of Thrones, Song of Ice and Fire. I know we talked about it on the podcast before, but Ned winning the Game of Thrones. Cersei says, you win or you die. Well, Ned dies, but he also could very well win. We don't know that he's won yet.
Mm-hmm.
But by being able to keep Jon that much of a secret, a Targaryen, the heir to the Iron Throne.
And even if he doesn't get to the Iron Throne, but at least if he has anything to do with a victory over the others, then he does win because he helps the realm. He saves the realm. It just seems at this point that Jon's going to be a crucial point in leading the realm versus... the Night's King and the White Walkers and the others. And
I mean, he already has been. That's what got him killed at the Wall was worrying about the bigger picture stuff right. and not about, like, the wildlings. You know.
Well, no one can even where were the wildlings for? Because
if we leave, they're people, but if we leave them there, they'll die and come at us anyway. So,
yeah. Do you want 50,000 or do you want 150,000?
Short-sighted, and then they kill him for it. But he's already thinking big picture. You got to think about the others. The others want to kill all of humanity. The real war. Jon Snow was able to see that. Stannis is able to see that. Melisandre is able to see that. But not that many other people. That's Ned's legacy is...
Prince Dale's promise. His life is based on a promise.
And Ned is responsible for getting him to that point. Safe. Unknown. And now it's at a point where the people he was worried about protecting Jon from, they're gone.
At least definitely in the show... At this point, he's a mark for Cersei now anyways.
Everybody's a mark for Cersei. Cersei wants to kill everybody.
Yeah. No one's going to kill him outside the Last Camp. He's already a mark for anyways. And maybe with Baelish, maybe? Varys?
That'd be interesting. How does Varys react?
Because Varys had a lot of things to do with Mad King to turn on Rhaegar. And he'll be like, oh, wait a minute. Rhaegar had that good old Joker up his sleeve.
The promise is really, I mean, it's the key thing for the whole series, it seems. Mm-hmm. There's a lot more to A Song of Ice and Fire. And we'll discuss them in the coming weeks and months. Kind of move on from the Starks a little bit and discuss other things. But, you know, as far as Ned Stark as a character, you know, his children, his legacy, the shadow that he has over this series in Westeros, it all stems from this promise that he made to Lyanna that we don't even understand. That we interpret one way with one read and then a different way with a second read, and you learn more and more just reading the same thing and just getting a better picture of what this story is. it's sad in the first place, and it's so admirable and honorable what he does to besmirch his own honor and to not even tell anybody, to keep that inside that has to kill him every day. That's what makes Ned Stark the favorite character for so many people. You know, he doesn't do anything awesome. He's not particularly skilled on a... We don't see that he's skilled on the battlefield. I mean, we hear that he's good, but he's blunders through King's Landing, just, you know, getting himself into so much trouble. And just like, dude, what are you doing? What are you doing? But we still love him. You don't... Whereas Catelyn Tully makes mistake after mistake and just like,
fuck her.
Yeah, dude. But not Ned, because Ned did this thing that, like, yes, could you do that? I don't know if I could do that. I don't know if I could.
Keep it such a secret and just...
I mean, obviously, we'd never be in a situation where we have to, but if we were, for some reason, for a person that's dead, could we make this promise that's going to affect the rest of our lives, not tell a soul? We have to live with what we look like to everyone else that doesn't know about what we're really doing, if that makes any sense. I don't know many people who could. I know I couldn't. But Ned can, and it's believable. It's fiction, obviously, but it's believable that this character, honor is so important to him, except when it comes to the love for his sister. Right.
But it is his honor, though, that actually saves him. He really is playing off his honor.
And like we said, it's not like he's going and making up this elaborate lie that he has to tell everybody about Johnny. It's just he gets asked directly, all right, Willow. I'll say Willow's the mother, and I'm not going to talk about it. And he doesn't. Willow's the mother. That's it. Not going to go into anything else. That's all you need to know. And his own wife. You know, he risks a relationship with his own wife, upon which the foundations of the new Westeros are built on. One of the bricks is the Tully Stark alliance, and he risks that for this little baby. A lot of lords of Westeros would say, yeah, absolutely, Lyanna. And she dies, and then you throw the baby to the wolves. A lot of lords would do that. Tywin would be capable of doing something like that. We know Tywin's capable of killing kids.
Mm-hmm. He has doesn't care.
But for Ned, and maybe that was part of it too, seeing the two Targaryen kids dying and then knowing he had the third Targaryen kid, he's betraying Robert.
He's knowing that will happen because Robert doesn't do it, the Lannisters will do it. The Lannisters will make sure this kid gets killed.
They just killed two Targaryens and here's another one. And I can't let another baby die. He would have done it anyway because he's Ned.
Yeah.
But that's all the more reason.
It's all about the children. You can't let any children die. It's not right to have children die.
Interesting that Lyanna knew that Robert would kill the baby.
She also probably knows, too, because if the King's Guard knows the Mad King died, and they know also that Aegon and Rhaenys died, I'm sure they told Lyanna.
Yo, they're all dead.
Yeah.
What do you do with that baby?
We're by ourselves now, and we're going to protect you, that we're sworn to protect you and him. We're sworn to protect him. At that time, they probably said, listen, I mean, I'm just assuming this, but I can see, like, Gerald Hightower, Oswald Wendt, and Arthur Dayne, like, kneeling to that, like, this is our king right now. At that time in their eyes, that is their king. Because they don't go to Viserys. That is their king.
And Lyanna, she wants to see Ned, but they can't let Ned, not while they're alive.
Right,
because
people ask, why not?
He just went to war with the Targaryens.
Right, against the Targaryens.
For Robert, and Robert just killed it.
His friend is the usurper who killed our prince. His pals killed everyone else.
So yeah, Ned's honorable, but we're not going to chance it with the Kingsguard. Our job is to protect that little baby, because he's king of Westeros. What else you got, my man?
That's it.
Thanks for listening. We appreciate it. That sums up our series on Ned Stark, and I'm sure we'll talk about him again somewhere down the road. We'll be back next week, and we're going to start talking about Daenerys Targaryen. Move away from Winterfell, move away from the North, and move away from Westeros altogether, and head over to Essos and Daenerys Targaryen, and we're going to talk about all the cool stuff she's got going on. As always, thanks for listening. Click subscribe, tell a friend, please leave a review on iTunes, and we will talk with you guys next week. The Princes That Were Promised is an action-packed podcast's production starring John Canteen and Shawnee Wan Kenobi. Produced by Sean Block. Developed by Sean Block and John Kantzian. Recorded at Action Packed Studio in Medford, New York. Find us on iTunes, Stitcher, and Audio Boom. Socialize with us at facebook.com/thepromisedprinces. Find it in your heart to leave your princes a review on iTunes to boost the show. Opinions and insights expressed on this show are in no way a reflection of George R.R. Martin or the producers
at HBO. All material covered in this show is the property of George R.R. Martin, Bantam Books in the United States, Home Box Office, Big Head Little Head Production Company, and the writers of Game of Thrones.
Atcha-patcha.